Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down and back to our continuing series with Philip Lawrence Sherrod. He is a Renaissance man. And I keep saying they're not making any more of him, and that's very true. And it's very important to me to get his thoughts, his words down. With this opportunity, just a wonderful talent as an artist. If you look online, you'll see just incredible artwork, beautiful artwork by this man. But he's so much more than that: music and philosophy and his thoughts and. We just spoke about his science background, and his first degree was in botany and zoology. And Philip, welcome back.
Okay, Frank. Yeah, well, I'm here.
As we left off, you were talking about the white birch and how it burnt down, due to either lightning strikes or forest fires. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand, and you could shed more light on this, it's considered a necessary situation when these fires occur, because it takes out, a lot of dead wood and a lot of, leaves and brush, and that allows things to grow under that. Yeah, is that true?
Underbrush, yeah.
Yeah, give us
yeah
a,
well, yeah. That's necessary for regrowth of fresh trees. But to lose what one attempted to save for the world, I still recycle paper. To trying to conserve the logging of the beautiful trees, because they fan the earth and cool it down. Where if the trees aren't there, it's like in New York City here, is that a few little trees along an avenue blows the wind through and takes the hot air out in the summer and gives fresh air, from Northwest invasion of oxygen and so forth for the human being. So the world, I wonder as to whether education or intelligent managing of the earth will save it. No wonder the experts are wanting to go to Mars, because they see also, I have dreams, horrible dreams, of concrete from New York City all the way out to Los Angeles. As a mass with no trees, I have same thing towards the north. I don't know whether the world will catch on before it's too late or what, or the people in it.
It is scary. It's a scary situation. Philip Lawrence Sherrod here with us, Frank McKay here with you. Let me ask you, you mentioned 3 weeks in the Adirondacks. You were, at one time you were camping up there, and I'm sure you've done that quite a bit. The Adirondacks.
12 years of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Adirondacks is kind of an interesting scenario, because it's really not all that far from, it's a few hours away driving from New York City. And mm-hmm. you have this vast wilderness up there, and there's no grizzlies, but there are a lot of black bear, about 3,000 black bear up there. There's some moose up there as well, and they came down from Canada. And there is a tremendous amount of wildlife in those mountains. Much more so than the Catskills, mm-hmm. which is even closer to New York City. But you spent some time up there in the mountains. What about wildlife up there? Did you see any moose?
Well, oh yes, I did. Oh yes, I even was stalked by a panther or a mountain lion.
Wow!
In that I had been fishing all day in Lost Lake, and so I had the smell of trout all over me. I'd caught several, had them for lunch, and then it began to cloud up. And so I started packing my little Jeep. I had a post office left-hand drive six-cylinder Jeep, and I drove deeper into the mountains. Now, I was forewarned by a forest ranger that came by. He said, it's a dangerous day to be out this far up north, which was something like, I don't know, but 20 miles from the Canadian border. And he said, you know all about, you have a degree, we've studied you. And so what did I do? Suddenly I realized the downpour was coming. In other words, a torrential rain came. I drove about a mile or two further, and then I began to back up to a couple of trees. And with a very heavy rope, I tied the back end of the Jeep to the tree, threw a tarp over it, and tried to dig in while it's pouring rain. Okay, so, but I left the back end open, and I did notice something that I was a little perturbed about. It was this, that I had camped, and this is a no-no for all campers, so I don't care who you are, where you are, never camp, and this is the wildlife knowledge, across a trail that is known to house a certain animal, whether it be a black bear, mountain lion, or whatever. So I threw a bedroll down, and I was exhausted. It was 9:30 at night. It was getting dark. And of course, or 7:30 actually to 9:30, it got dark. Suddenly, I laid my flashlights, as I always do, next to my sleeping bag and myself, one on either side, like two Texas or Oklahoma pistols. And I went to sleep. I just passed out. I was that tired. But the smell of the trout was on my hands. It was on my jacket. And suddenly, at about 9:30, I hear this, and it was a mountain lion. I grabbed the flashlights and spun around in the bedroll, and it must have been a female that had pups, because I saw her, and she was a huge, beautiful cat, and she leaped into the wet leaves and disappeared.
Wow.
So once again, my life was saved by some foolish checking the rules as I go along.
Yeah.
Because I was in a log jam, previously riding 6.5 miles on a raft made by cables in an old ranger station, and it treated the raft, and the raft was something like 14 feet wide, 20 feet long. It was treated like a matchstick when the boys and myself, four of us, pushed it off into the river, the Snake River. Mm. So I've had a couple of close calls.
Yeah.
And then you call me here with more danger, you know. This is Frank McKay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully this is much easier than those moments. But that's just one of a kind moment that you can't buy that moment. I mean, it's scary, yes, but to live to tell something like that, it's amazing. So many people try to see mountain lions in the wild, and they never get that opportunity. You got it, and you survived, and fortunately, you didn't get attacked, or you didn't get anything tragic happen there. But they really are beautiful, mountain lions, and I've seen them in the wild and from a distance from a car in Wyoming. I saw one early in the morning, and I kind of walked across. It was an immature cat. You know, he was a male. You know, probably about 65, 70 pounds, which is pretty, pretty small, I guess, for one. And I would have thought it was a bobcat, other than the fact that the tail, you know, the mm-hmm. tail is much longer and heavier. Frank McKay here with Philip Lawrence Sherrod, and he's seen it all. He's an artist. He's a scientist. He's a man of many thoughts. He's an athlete. Had a higher batting average in Oklahoma than the Oklahoma kid, the Commerce Comet.
Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, and just an amazing career. All in all, his artwork is unbelievable. Frank McKay here with Philip Lawrence Sherrod. What else in the Adirondacks have you come across? Black bear, I'm sure, right? You've seen black bear and
many black bear. In fact, the black face seems to be more prominent than the cinnamon or red face.
I
came around a corner one morning and suddenly see this black bear standing upright, sniffing the air. And I thought, well, I can smell it too. It's a steak somebody's cooking for breakfast. And it was just barely dawn. And so I've seen the beautiful, they have beautiful eagles and osprey up there, birds, predator birds that, in other words, you know, the degree helped me with the constant understanding of, you could say, the eastern flyway of birds. Well, that's what has been happening at Idlewild or JFK Airport, because these birds, it's their natural habitat, and we are running these huge jets into their paths rather than the world thinks and the people in it that, you know, that it's non-consequential, that that the birds shouldn't be there. And they are even, should I say, taking out the North Canadian goose as much as they can. Yep. So that it doesn't mess up the engines of the jets and bring the planes down and, of course, kill people.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
I saw everything up there. I mean, sharp-shinned hawks, porcupines, you know, you name it, it was there in the Adirondacks. The same thing in Idaho. I took a hat, a 10-gallon hat, straw hat, and popped it into the back of a porcupine and had a hat of quills. And somehow that was thrown out in the evolution of my life, leaving Oklahoma. But, there is a whole social system among animals before we as inhabitants have come to this country, unless we're native. And there's a respect by all Indians of animals, more so than I can say the Western European people, unless they come from a place of the Rhine River or, you know, places where there were wild boars, which are the pigs of nature turned loose or escaped years ago. So that's kind of the story of what we're, you know, what's going on outside of the city.
Yeah, I mean, do you see things getting better? I mean, we're supposed to be more enlightened at this point, and this generation, you know, at least brags about being more enlightened. Do you see things getting better as far as conservation goes? You watched it at a young man. You watched. You know, your grandfather, or heard your grandfather talk about wolves that were no longer there, and obviously they...
Talk about them. I heard them and saw them.
Yeah, right. Wow.
They were right to the house at that time. I hope education will enlighten the masses, because it's the masses that don't know what they're doing and are exterminating everything, you know, and invading the natural tendencies of the animals in this land. So I hope it's true, although I do see, I see them talk about it, but do little.
Yeah.
I mean, the forest rangers in the park are overloaded with people setting fires, fighting, you know, this and that, getting drunk. And so I see the same repeat. I just have to hope that in time, and it has to be very shortly, that some things can be corrected.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, I'm of the same mind that you are, and hopefully things are getting better. I hope, you know, we could only hope. Philip Lawrence Sherrod is our very special guest, part of a continuing series with the artist and composer and so much more than that. And we encourage everyone to binge listen to everything that we're doing here. Fascinating man. They're not making any more Renaissance people, and there are very few in this world, and you happen to be listening to one. Philip Lawrence Sherrod is that man. Let me switch gears here. And you know, I asked you if things are getting better from the wildlife and the conservation. And how do you like the way society's going in general? You mentioned computers coming into your life in 2001. They've taken over computers, and the generation behind me now, my children are millennials, and they're taking over. And I guess the generation after that will not know a world without a dominant internet and everything else. Do you like where they're going with it? Do you have
trepidations? I actually see the world going backwards. Now, people are going to chagrin me over that, but it seems as if the greater push button involvement of an attempt to offer communication. No one has time anymore to actually talk like one-on-one, like we're doing this right now.
Yeah.
And only, I should say, maybe the upper crust can handle, and the lower crust of the population doesn't seem to even care. I think we're being isolated more by the push-button involvement of, I mean, beautiful shows like Hollywood's produced, like Zombie, things like that. The Walking Dead are here with us. And how many people do we exchange with about topics that interest us, meaning per person? Unless you go to a party that is maybe among psychiatrists, artists, of maybe a higher ilk of concerns. And so I'm a little, in 1954, in sociology at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater, Oklahoma, there was this thing that not only amazed me, I had experienced it, whether it be rattlesnakes or rats, in that if you put two or three rats in a bag, they're fine. But as you put in more rats in a more crowded environment, like let's say 18, they begin to eat each other and fight. So that's really what the metropoles represent, greater population. People are fighting, they're killing each other, they're, you know, They're just fighting and wasting their energy rather than them giving to the environment and population greater concerns of exchange on a positive note. So I have to raise eyebrows on, I don't know where it's going to go, but in my life, I've always felt that I was never in a place that I could accept, except maybe talking to people like you.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's scary where we're going, and it's the unknown. And I think there's a lot of people that they might not express it because you know it's considered maybe being frightened of the new generation, which a lot of people are, but I think there's a lot of people, including myself, that have trepidations about where we're going. in society, and if we're going to take the if we're just you mentioned a push button society, it's a good way of looking at it. We've become a push button society. I mean, it's horning hard it right at the extreme amounts here. It's not only cooking, or it's not only getting a sandwich here in a machine. It's so much more than that. We're being run by these machines. Let me ask you to stay right where you are. Philip Lawrence Sherrod, Frank McKay here with the artist, the composer, the philosopher, soon to be the author of a new book coming out, and look him up, Philip Lawrence Sherrod. Thank you very much for being here, Philip.
Oh, okay, Frank. Thank you.
Frank McKay signing off. Philip Lawrence Sherrod has been our guest, and he's part of a continuing series about the man in his own words, and thrilled to be part of it. Please binge listen to everything that we're doing here. Doesn't have to be in any particular order, but Philip Lawrence Sherrod here with me, Frank McKay, very proud to have him. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.